time to wake up with Bill Finch. 203-333-9422. Only on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And welcome this Sunday morning to Wake Up, your radio home for truth and democracy, a home for all who have tired of being divided and manipulated, a home for those tired of Fox News and the right-wing screamers and whiners of talk radio, for those tired of entertainment masquerading as news, for those tired of the internet being exploited by propagandists, for those of you who are tired of the science deniers, the billionaires, the bullies, the climate deniers, tired of those who won't fight the scourge of gun violence, tired of those who openly defy our laws and our sacred U.S. Constitution, tired of those who aren't fighting for everyday workers while passing massive tax breaks for the financial elites. Are you tired? If you're tired and you want to do something about it, wake up and we'll help strengthen you for the battles ahead. For 1 hour every Sunday, we bring you the guests who are providing patriotic, full-throated endorsement of our pillars of democracy and red meat for the ideals that built this great nation. Today, we bring you voices that you may not have heard from recently. I'm your host, Bill Finch, and I'd like to welcome to the studio, and it's always nice to see people in the studio because you can see their faces and see their emotion, and I know we're going to have a lot of emotion from Earl Bloodworth, who is the director of Connecticut Against Gun Violence, and the power behind the throne at Connecticut Against Gun Violence, Melissa Kane. I've known her for many years. She's helped with Bridgeport projects like the Green Village Initiative and others, and I am just so happy that you're both here in the studio because we are in such an unusual time. We talked about it beforehand, about the attack on the pillars of democracy, the attack on our public safety institutions. We're not prepared for this, are we? I mean, it's just, it blows me away that we're sitting here. I'm a student of government since I was like 10. That's a long time ago. And really, look at this hair. I mean, I have a deal with my hair, though. It can turn any color. It just can't leave. So I just think, I know we're all kindred spirits here. I mean, Earl, let me just start with you. You've had your own unique experiences growing up. You believe in our system of government, knowing that it's imperfect and we can operate within the government to make changes. What's your feeling about the situation that we're in today? I'm not sure we can hear you on the mic. Let me go to you, Melissa, and start. And Earl, can we have a check on his mic? Oh, there we go. There we go, Earl.
Yeah, I think the thing that strikes me most is what you said about being unprepared. We are woefully unprepared, considering that the outcome, while unknown of the election, the plan that was preceding the outcome of the election, which is basically Project 2025, was in the zeitgeist for at least 2 years, and there was no preparation for it whatsoever. And then,
was it because we couldn't actually believe that this kind of crap could happen in our country?
Maybe, but given the circumstances and the fact that the administration or the head of the administration won once before.
I try to refrain from his name.
Yeah,
if you call him the Orange Man.
Yeah,
type his name, it's with a small T.
It's like not saying Voldemort.
Right.
Yeah.
But the fact that one, we were woefully unprepared when that document was out there for almost 2 years and readily accessible for anyone to access. And then once he did win, there still seemed to be no preparation because everybody was in shock. But still. It's like we're playing catch up.
I wonder, though, if I had read to you and me Project 2025 2 years ago, Melissa, I mean, would you have thought, well, this could never happen?
Well, I don't know. You're talking to someone who is right at home. First of all, it's great to be here with you because I think you and I see eye to eye on a lot of things. And I tend to be a glass half empty kind of person. So I think that
you were ready.
I don't know. I was ready, but I believed, like, oh yeah, this could happen. And from what I had studied in school, I mean, oddly enough, when I was in college many years ago, I'm not quite as old as Bill, but I'm getting there. I studied the dissident movement in Eastern Europe and the USSR, and looking at how authoritarian and totalitarianism regimes, they hold people down and how you fight back against them. So I wasn't And of course, I was there and I was involved as an activist and pushing back during the man who shall not be mentioned's first term. Sure. So I wasn't completely surprised. And there were a lot of really intelligent people out there screaming and yelling and saying, please watch this.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people were preparing themselves isn't the right word, but were really aware that this might and probably could happen. I just think it wasn't. I think as Americans, we have this.
You're getting
vision.
A little lazy.
Well, lazy is one word
with
for
democracy.
It. Yeah,
right?
But yeah. It's like this vision, like we are what is this American exceptionalism, like it can't possibly happen
right.
here.
Right.
You know, we're free, whatever that means. We're not actually looking at what that means, but we're free. So, so I don't know. I'm going to start. I said I'm a glass half empty person, but I'm just going to start by saying, yes, we were unprepared as a country, but one of the greatest things we have in our favor is that at the state level, we have some
where
things
we see
in place.
Each other on those hard floors all the time, those marble floors.
State
we're
going
to have to take a quick break here for news and an update, and we'll, commercials. I'll get it, Adrian. I'll get it. Anyway, back to the studio.
Join the conversation, 203-333-9422. Back to Wake Up with Bill Finch, live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And let me just thank Adrian, our producer, for helping me. I'm still learning. It's my 25th show, but I'm still kind of a knucklehead when it comes to all these wires and lights. And thank you. Thank you very much. And I back in the studio, I'm so honored to have Earl Bloodworth from Connecticut Against Gun Violence, the executive director, and she has many titles, but Melissa Kane is sort of the power behind the throne there. We just went to a huge fundraiser at Long Wharf, and we raised...
Longshore.
I'm sorry.
The inn at Longshore in Westport.
Yeah, I found it. Okay.
Yes, you did.
The lady on Waze helped me get there, you know. but it was amazing to see so many like-minded people, and I'm encouraged. I need this. I know we all need it, right? Because we talked about not being prepared. The rise of authoritarianism in the United States of America, never since Father Coughlin, you know, was a fascist on the radio back in the 30s. We haven't seen this.
No.
It was always fringe, right?
Yeah. But it was always there. It was
violence,
fringe, but it was there.
You know, I look at January 6th, and I say to myself, how could anyone support a person who fomented that kind of violence? And what we're talking about today, we want to move into the topic, is gun violence. We know there's a Medusa ahead of us of issues where the right wing is seemingly winning and we've got to fight back, right? They want more gun violence. They want more gun ownership. There's a national movement now to allow carry concealed weapons in every state, or there'll be retribution against the state if they don't allow it. Have you heard about that?
I have heard about that, but even more immediately, and I think Earl can sort of expand on this, just this week, Trump signed another executive order. Oh, I said I wasn't going to say that name. But
the loser in court. Call him the loser in court.
Which basically will allow a part that you can add to a gun that can help turn any kind of a gun into a machine gun, something that had been made illegal after Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
It's unthinkable. There's no reason to do this. This has nothing to do with...
If you're playing to an ignorant mass that's easily scared by these videos, these false videos of hordes of people coming across the border,
right.
People of color, let's face it, this is racism as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have brown people being detained and sent to El Salvador. We don't have white people. We have white people who took all the land in South Africa being welcomed. What?
Right.
The oppressors are being welcomed here. I mean,
it feels upside down.
It is upside down.
The Statue of Liberty is weeping.
Okay, so he's got this new crazy executive order which will make weapons automatic.
Right. The force reset triggers. It's a lawsuit that was challenged by ATF rule banning these force reset trigger devices that allow semi-automatic weapons to fire rapid bursts of bullets. Essentially, the ATF is being neutered. Or nerfed, if you're in the anime world.
Nerfed?
Yeah.
Explain that, Earl.
They're just being depowered.
Defamed. No, anime.
Oh, anime?
You know, you got
that's a whole hour.
My kids are into it.
Yeah, it's a form of Japanese animation.
Right.
So,
and their lingo is nerfed.
Nerfed, yeah.
Okay, like a Nerf gun.
Kind of, but
it's
basically...
It's kind of interesting to see ATF being shot with a Nerf gun.
Yeah, basically you nerf something that's overpowered, or OP as we call it.
I got to have you on more often. I'm learning so much here. So we know this will be challenged in court. William Tong has got a well-worn path to the federal court system, along with the blue state attorney generals. Isn't this crazy that we have red? It's like the Civil War all over again, right? There was red states who want to promote guns and blue states who want to control them. And we have you know, very low violent gun violence rates in the blue states that have tough gun laws, right? Talk about the difference between
what you've accomplished here. I think we're number two or three in the country
for
our gun laws and
loss of life.
And loss of life. And that's because we have focused literally for the last 30 years on making sure that we have smart, sensible gun safety legislation.
You know, I as mayor, I had to deal with the hopelessness that's found in many communities. And you see the children being recruited by violent gangs. And then you end up in the hospital with their parents. And they're dying.
Yeah.
Access
to guns, unfortunately, is very easy, and something that I talked about this past week in Westport was the access to guns, as well as, you know, the disaffected and despair that can result in a lack of resources that you often see in urban communities, unfortunately, and you mix those two and it's a deadly combination, unfortunately. I know just probably about a month and a half ago, maybe 2 months now, there was a middle schooler, unfortunately, in the city of Bridgeport that brought a handgun into the school, in middle school. And unfortunately, that's not uncommon.
Yeah. I was just going to add that while we have focused for many years on legislating, restricting access from people who shouldn't have guns, one of the things we haven't really until recently been able to address or tried to address is that lack of cycles of poverty, cycles of violence, and lack of resources.
And yet we're cutting the mental health money to the schools. And every time there's a shooting, what do the Republicans do? They get on their high horse, their white horse, allegedly, and they start screaming, mental health is the issue, not the guns.
Correct.
But we have guns. Listen, listeners, figuratively, and I'm going to have the gun experts back me up on this. In the United States of America, it's like tractor-trailer trucks dumping weapons of war on the main streets of Chicago, New York, Bridgeport, Hartford, New Haven. It's like that. Compared to Europe, where these things are regulated, you know, George Bush and Bill Clinton got together and had the first, they agreed on the first assault weapons ban.
Correct.
What happened?
Well, it expired.
It expired, and we've just had the first gun legislation or firearms legislation in
thanks
over
to Senator
30 years.
Murphy and Cory Booker.
Correct. The Bipartisan Savers Community Act. A good colleague of mine, Dr. Jennifer Tucker, really focuses in on this out of Wesleyan at the Center for the Study of Guns in Society. A lot of military applications have made it into America. You know, the microwave, all of these things, a lot of have come from the military.
DARPA,
the internet.
Yeah.
So, but one of the other things that have come from the military are guns. And as they increase the lethality and technology of guns, those have transmitted over into the community.
It was never meant. I mean, this whole Second Amendment, it's so perverted. I mean, and Justice Berger leaving the court said that this is the biggest hoodwink on the American public that's ever happened, because it says in order to establish a well-regulated militia, meaning we had no army, everybody was compelled to take the musket from over the fireplace and go shoot redcoats.
Right.
That's how we became a country. The Minuteman, you're from Westport. There's a statue of a Minuteman. That's why there's a Second Amendment. It's not so we can sell kids in the inner city machine guns.
No.
This is crazy.
No, that's just about selling a product.
Yeah.
This is about an industry spending 30 years creating a false culture war to sell more and more products.
So,
and to Earl's point and your point, they call it black gun culture. As the military guns became more in fashion and what people wanted, that is what they were marketing, and more and more of that was hitting the streets. They are more and more lethal.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, we continue to fight. Since 2020, we've reduced gun violence and homicides by gun violence in the state of Connecticut by roughly 46%. And that's inclusive of being intentional with the Bipartisan Safer Community Act. And you were correct in your assertion that, you know, they talk about, you know, mental health, but over $12 billion, roughly between $9 and $12 billion was cut from the CDC which translated to about $150 to $155 million being cut from the Connecticut Department of Mental Health, or excuse me, public health, which results in cutting funding from our suicide prevention, mental health, trauma-informed care, all of those things, as well as rescinding or freezing funds from the Bipartisan Community Act that focused on mental health in our schools, middle yeah. schools and high schools.
When you really can't talk about gun violence without talking about suicide, because
sure.
two-thirds of
yeah.
all gun deaths
over
in
half,
this country,
yeah.
right, are by suicide.
Yeah.
So that goes back to access and safe storage and mental health.
And when guns are properly locked, I mean, I'm a fisherman. I hunt. I don't hunt, but I don't have any problem with hunting. And tons of my friends hunt mm-hmm. and fish. I just happen to just do part of that equation. But they all lock their guns in a safe. They lock their ammunition yeah. in another safe. And all of them believe in closing the gun show loophole. Mm-hmm. They all agree that concealed weapons are dangerous. They all agree that you should keep your guns safe and locked. They all agree that domestic violence and sexual violence offenders should not be getting guns. I recently taught a civics class to I work for the IBW, the International mm-hmm. Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, and I taught a civics class up in Monroe at our Bridgeport office. And there were two members out of about 80 or 90 that were very interested in the gun issue. And they said, well, you want to take my guns away. I said, no, that's not true.
Correct.
That's not true. You can have all the guns you want. You can't have assault weapons. So one guy, there was winnowed it down to one guy who loved his, he had an AR-15. He loved it. I said, listen, if you want to vote Republican because they're going to let you keep your AR-15 while they're taking your right to have a union away, while they're taking your right to free speech away, while they're taking your voting rights away, while they're reducing your financial ability to earn a living by being a member of the IBEW and having project labor agreements, then if the gun is more important, you should vote Republican.
Well, can I want to answer that, actually. I want to address a couple of things you said. First of all, what we're talking about, which is sensible gun laws, like you're talking about
yeah.
what, that's not partisan. It's been made very, very clear.
And all of the
in
members
the United
agreed
States,
with those mm-hmm. things
this
I said.
This is not
all
a partisan
them.
Issue, okay? It has become extraordinarily political.
Yeah.
But that's because of the NRA. So interestingly, the NRA.
The bankrupt NRA?
The bankrupt NRA.
The one that we're trying to resuscitate now?
NRA. But the NRA.
Morally and financially, right?
Used mm-hmm. to promote exactly
gun
what
safety.
You were talking
I took the
about.
Class. Did
exactly.
you either of you take the class? It was a great class.
And let me just put in a plug for Connecticut Against Gun Violence. We are not Connecticut Against Guns.
Right.
We are Connecticut Against Gun Violence.
Of course.
We represent hunters. We represent people, gun owners. We want safe gun storage.
We're going to have to take a break, but that is such an important point. We can come back to that. I want to talk a little bit more about how we've approached this as a public health model.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're both very well versed at that. And we're going to go to the news now, and Adrian in the booth, he'll take us away. We'll be back in about 3 or 4 minutes.
Talking about what matters to you this morning. Wake up with Bill Finch. WICC 695.9, the voice of Connecticut.
And I'm so happy you joined us this Sunday on WICC 600 AM and 95.9 FM. Thanks to Connoisseur Media for giving those left of center a voice here to fight against the whiners and the screamers of right-wing media, some of which is on this radio station, too. But we're balancing it out here every Sunday morning, and they've got great guests this morning. Earl Bloodworth, from the executive director of the Connecticut Against Gun Violence, and Melissa Kane, chairman of the board and power behind the fundraising efforts and the lobbying efforts. We see each other often on those slick floors at the Capitol, slip sliding around, trying to get legislation to stop slip sliding around and get approved. And I want to talk just briefly. Look, we're both community organizers. All three of us are community organizers. We know that community organizing can result in a better world, can result in better laws. We just talked briefly about how, on my way here by the dam at Beardsley Park, there were 6 or 7 osprey and a bald eagle fishing. That was not possible when I was a kid, because there were pesticides and the migrating fish were blocked by dams. And we all organized. We petitioned. We had Earth Day every year. And you did the same thing in fighting gun violence. And as a result of your efforts here in Connecticut, we are the second safest state in the country. I see Senator Bob Duff posts all the time about what a wonderful place Connecticut is. One of the reasons why we're a wonderful place, Melissa, right, is we're safe. We don't have
relatively
this plethora
safe.
Of gun violence.
That's true.
It could be better, and that's why we're organizing.
There's a lot more to do, obviously. But, yeah, we have spent the last 30 years Starting in 1993, we were one of the first three states to institute an assault weapons ban.
Yeah.
And it's been growing since then. We were the first ERPO, Extreme Risk Protection Order state, and we have worked on that law and improved that law since. I won't go through all the laws that we have helped pass, but the more important thing about what you're saying is that it's about people standing up in their community. So we are a vehicle. We bring people to the Capitol to lobby with us. We help people reach out to their legislators. We make people see, you know, when we started this, the NRA and the CCDL could get more people in a room
than we could.
Than we could.
Sure.
Correct.
And that was really true nationally. No, but that's true. That was true nationally with the NRA and the gun violence prevention space. As we've grown, and as people have seen what a horrific public health emergency gun violence in this country and in this state is, more and more people standing up, standing together, and letting their legislators know that they want change is what makes all the difference.
Absolutely, the power is in the people.
Yeah. So that's kind of, you know, one of our main focuses and where we excel. And we at our organization at CAGV, we provide that opportunity. We have action groups. We have lobby days. In fact, coming Wednesday, we're going to put in a plug this Wednesday and the following Wednesday, which I want to say is May 28th. I don't have the date in front of me, are our last two lobby days of this legislative session. And we have a suite of legislation that we are very excited and hopefully passing that really continue our legacy of making Connecticut safer. And I'm really, really proud of one of those pieces of legislation that I just, if you don't mind, if you'll humor me, I want to go into a little detail.
We want to go into that because that's how you got us to be the second safest state in the country.
Well, this one's kind of cool. This is cool, and I think it addresses some of the things you were talking about earlier. It's House Bill 7042. It's affectionately known as FIRA. It's the Firearm Industry Responsibility Act. And it is a direct, I wouldn't say it a response to, but it is the responsible.
It started in the House. It's a House bill.
It was started in the Judiciary Committee. It is a House bill. But we brought it to.
Which means your first calls have to be to your House of Representative member to get it out of the House and then call the Senate.
Yes. Well, the first calls would have been to the Judiciary Committee.
Right.
We did that. But this was a
and it passed. How overwhelmingly did it pass?
Oh, overwhelmingly, and we had Republican support.
Isn't that wonderful?
Which was great. We had five Republicans. I think 105.
You want to call out any of the Republicans? We always want to encourage Republicans to.
Earl can look those. I don't know the names off. I will look those up, but I'll tell you a little bit about the bill first because.
Well, you'll have them on your website at some point.
We do, but this one's important because in 2005, PLCA was passed. In the United States Congress, and that's the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, which basically shields the firearm industry from any responsibility. No other industry in the United States has anything like this. So we have taken one of the exceptions or one of the written in exceptions in that law, which is called a predicate exception, and we are following eight other states, and we are creating a responsibility act whereby the firearms industry will have to play by the rules and root out the bad apples. This really, if you're doing your job right, this does not in any way affect you. This is just about people who are bad actors in the industry, whether it's in manufacture, in wholesale, or in retail.
You remember the Tommy gun?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Well, the manufacturers in Massachusetts, and when I was fighting the Moonies taking over UB, which they're not there anymore. I have a UB cup right here. They can
see
my cup.
Very
I love
purple.
UB now, but they were owned by the Moonies. And one of Moon's son bought the Tommy Gun Company, and he's a far right activist. He's a fascist, I guess. And you know, he bought this company so he could make Tommy guns again. Make Tommy guns great again.
Sidebar. It's a good sidebar.
No, I mean it. There's a reason that we have legislation. Like, you can't walk into a pool hall or a restaurant and have a vending machine that dispenses packs of cigarettes anymore, right?
Right.
Similar
or
for
firearms.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this is really bringing the firearm industry in line with other industries, and it is also more importantly providing a direct line for access to justice for. Victims of firearm injury.
Yeah.
I mean, look, what's the goal is to make it so that fewer firearm injuries happen. We're hoping to save lives, as all of the legislation that we aim to pass does. Another piece of legislation that's very important to us, I would love it if Earl, you know, you could go into the details of it, but we've spent the past 5 years really working very hard to make sure that funding is going directly into the organizations that are on the ground in the communities that are most affected by gun violence.
Correct. Which ultimately formed an advisory committee to the Department of Public Health, and then with an Office of Violence Prevention and Injury Prevention and Firearms at the Department of Public Health, initially funded by ARPA funding. But we, in our efforts and advocacy, have funding as a line item in the governor's budget, roughly $3.9 million per year of the biennium. And we want to make sure that, that funding stays. We've seen a lot of great results being intentional, having that office in the Department of Public Health.
Why don't you repeat that one more time before we go to break?
Sure.
The effort is to get how much in the budget?
$3.9 million.
For
each year of the biennium budget.
So that's split it in half. It's for 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's to do...
No, it's 3.9 per year.
Oh, each year. Yeah. Okay,
yes.
To
fund organizations that are on the grounds, like Compass, like CTVIP, like Hartford Community That Cares.
Violence interruption.
Correct.
Hospital violence.
Like what Charlie Grady used to
yes.
do.
Yes, hang time. Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. Yep.
Yeah. Wonderful. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back after this to talk about how Connecticut's the second safest state because of the efforts of people like the two guests I have in the studio today.
Wake Up with Bill Finch is live on WICC 600 and 95.9, the voice of Connecticut. Speak your mind. 203-333-9422.
And we're back in the studio with Earl Bloodworth and Melissa Kane from the Connecticut Against Gun Violence. They have been indefatigable, whatever way you want to say it, in their efforts, CAGV. I'm proud to wear their little rubber snapper band on my wrist every day. And it's funny how many people ask me, well, you have this gay thing on there. That's Proud Academy. And then what's the other one? Oh, that's CCAG. I say, it's my guns and gays. You know, it's right on my wrist. These are the people. These are my peeps. So, listen, we have worked hard on many things. I can remember being in the state Senate for it was 7.5 years, and I left the last half of my second term in office to go to be mayor. And I can remember we voted on background checks.
Mm-hmm.
We voted on red flag laws to make sure domestic violence perpetrators don't have guns.
Extreme risk protection order, like to call them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And lost and stolen firearms. And I can remember two or three other things. And it felt great.
Yeah.
You put your finger on the green button and you get something done and you move Connecticut up to be the second safest state for gun violence.
Well,
we've got more to do.
Well, I just want to say that I think we're only second because Gifford's does the ratings and Gifford's is in California. So I don't know. Are we second?
Listen. You want to be Mississippi?
No.
You want to be Louisiana?
No, believe me, you don't.
Oh my God, the blood is running in some community streets, and I have to point out again. You know, a lot of times we don't care about this because this is about race.
They are making some progress in some of those states, though. There are people fighting hard, just like we're fighting hard here.
They're wonderful following your model here.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, after Sandy, Sandy Hook. It raised the issue to a much higher level. And, you know, that made some people in my city a little uncomfortable because we've had, let's just say it frankly, we had a lot of young black kids being murdered before that.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to think that there's some racial element to this. I mean, Earl, you're in a position where you've been active in the black community. Do you see what I see?
I absolutely do see that. You know, we do have, in some instances, a lack of resources. We have sometimes the mentality of wash, rinse, repeat, and we're doing some of the same things. But what you'll see with what we've done with our advocacy for the funding of the $3.9 million getting into the hands of grassroots organizations like we were talking about, you are seeing the impact of that. You're seeing reduction.
We're finally acknowledging this.
Yeah, you're seeing interruption of violence. You're seeing people get the health care behavioral-wise, like the work that LifeBridge is doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. you're seeing the impact of being intentional with funding to address a certain issue.
Living in a city, you see these kids grow up, and you see they weren't killers when they were 2 and 3 years old. They were just like my kids at 2 and 3 years old. I'll just give you one example of how it hits home. Maybe people in it can relate to this. I have a son named Christopher. His classmate was named Christopher. One was Caucasian, one was African-American. And you don't even need to know which one was which, right? And one was sitting on a stone wall by his house waiting for his little sister to get off the bus and take her home. My son named Christopher was working somewhere. And a random drive-by killed the other Christopher. So you go through school, and family is wonderful. The parents are both pastors. The sister is a courageous firefighter. And he was just sitting there waiting for his little sister to be picked up by the bus, and he's dead. Yeah. One's alive and one's dead. It's just amazing how capricious and arbitrary gun violence can be.
Well, indeed. I'll say it's not that arbitrary, right? I mean, we could see the statistics that black and brown communities are
highly more impacted.
Five times more. You know,
five times
something
more.
Like that. I mean,
up
to 5 times more. And what Earl is talking about is starting to address the root causes of the violence and of the gun violence. And that means taking a hard look in the mirror.
Yeah. Earl, what do you think are the roots?
I mean, you could talk about structural racism. You could talk about the overmass incarceration. Over the last 10 years, I've worked.
The failing school systems.
Yeah, failing school systems. But in regards to mass incarceration, you had a lot of people that were locked up for marijuana charges. And they still have these on their records, which
is why
we fought for the clean slate legislation.
Sure, yeah.
Because right now in Connecticut, you have probably 120,000 people that are eligible for the clean slate legislation that hasn't been fully implemented. Roughly about 120,000.
These are primarily young men.
Men and women.
And they can't really get on with their lives because they have this black mark on their
record.
Correct.
Or scarlet letter or whatever you want to call it. And they can't fully integrate back into the community.
And most of it had to do with marijuana.
Not most of it, but the bill, the clean slate
Which
legislation.
Is not legal.
Right.
Yeah.
Now is legal. The clean slate legislation covers it covers misdemeanors and then up to e-felonies. So you have people that may
minor
have done,
offenses.
Minor offenses. You have people that may have done something 10, 20 years ago and they're still being impacted and can't fully integrate back into the community get a full-time livable wage job and seek housing.
I'm glad or get a financial aid to go to college.
Correct.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because there's just so much that we need our listeners to understand about the systemic problems of some of the youth. They're not sitting there saying, "Hey, how can I become antisocial? How can I be unemployed?" It's
And let's add to that lack of economic opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So Bridgeport, look at Bridgeport and where it is sandwiched and the fact that, so CAGV did a blueprint of gun violence prevention for the city of Bridgeport.
Oh,
one
thank
of
you.
The issues that came up among the things that Earl has just been discussing was that you have a populace who are not, they're not privy to the economic opportunity that all of the communities around them are, which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's a shame on many, many, many levels. And it's something, and it's a very complex problem.
Well, my bosses are listening probably, so I just want to give a quick shout out to the building trades, because if you have a kid that wants to get into the middle class, every single building trade has apprentices, and all their training is free. In the case of the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, you will get 1,000 hours of free instruction. It's equivalent to a master's degree classroom time. And you can have an apprenticeship while you begin earning and saving for retirement and health care, full, terrific health care, from the jump, from the day you start.
And I am fully on board with that. My son has just become a plumbing apprentice.
Oh, great.
He's going to be so rich.
Applause here. What's his name?
His name is Isaac Bloodworth. He's also college educated. Graduated out of the University of Connecticut with
Go Huskies.
Indeed, a focus in puppetry. So he does
fantastic.
That.
So he knows carpentry skills and all that already.
He knows
electrical
carpentry
skills.
Yeah. He's going to learn some electrical, some HVAC, but he's doing his thing. And he's still doing his art and doing murals throughout the state. So
when I was at UConn, I met with the recently elected Congressman Chris Dodd.
So
I'm old, right? And he looked at me. He was a couple years older than me, not many. but he was the older brother. And he said, Billy, let me tell you something. My father always told me the greatest social program is a job. And he was working in 1975 on economic conversion from the Vietnam War economy to a non-war economy, talking about making commuter rail and buses at Electric Boat rather than nuclear attack submarines.
Oh, wow.
The guy was a visionary, and unfortunately sometimes visionaries are, you know, left behind. But shout out to Christopher Dodd, great man, great for Connecticut, just as you two are. Please tell us in the last few minutes, we've got about 4 minutes now, what you see for the future. What did we learn in the past? What did we learn from our mistakes? And what do you think we can do in the future? And what can listeners do? Let's go with you, Melissa.
That's a great question, and it is complex. And if I run out of time, thank you for having us.
Oh, you're welcome.
It's really important.
We're going to do it again.
These things, I would love to.
Yeah.
So I think what's most important.
Keep us the second safest state, right?
No.
Make us the
we
first.
Always want to be the first. What's most important right now is acting at the state level, right?
Yeah, the federal level is kind of like a waste of time.
You know, Attorney General Tong, who's doing so much for this state. If we can talk about one person who is able to be doing something to fight what's happening, you know.
It's really our only recourse is the courts, right?
But he always talks about the state as the firewall, and we are the firewall on so many issues, one very important one being gun violence prevention. So it's passing this legislation. It's making sure that the funding goes, because we're certainly not getting federal funding, as Earl said. It's been erased, basically. But making sure that we are appropriating funding to the organizations on the ground making change and interrupting violence.
So when you call your legislator, you want to tell them to support Bill 7042, making the manufacturers responsible, and you want to tell them to keep the money in the budget
for the
community
bill.
Organizations who are fighting
support the governor's
violence before guns are involved.
Yeah.
Earl, give me your take on this.
I mean, it's simple. If we don't learn from our past, we're gonna be doing the repeated. When we had an assault rifles ban before it expired, we saw a tremendous reduction in harm to people. I think the stats show that in 2021 or 2020 that, you know, we lost 49,000 people to gunfire, whether that was accidental or whether that was intimate partner violence or whether that was suicide or homicide. We lost more people to firearms than we did to car accidents.
And it's the largest cause of death of children under 10 years old.
Correct.
Tell me why you're in this fight.
I mean, ostensibly, I've been in this fight for quite some time, working in the reentry field. If folks, men, women, other, are not properly resourced when they're released from incarceration after serving their sentence to community, then we're going to have an increase of recidivism, and we're going to have a reduction in public safety. So it benefits us all around to make sure that people are made whole once they are released from their sentences. And it also makes sense to have some smart gun laws.
Yeah, right. Melissa, tell me why you're involved.
I'm in this fight because I have always felt that.
Because you're a fighter by nature.
I'm a fighter.
You're both fighters,
right?
By nature.
Like, if you don't stand up and fight for the things you believe in, no one else is going to, period. But specifically this fight, when my first baby was born, shootings, random shootings were all over the news. Mm. Infants getting shot, being, you know, walked down the street in their strollers. And it struck me as insane that that is the country we live in. So I started getting, you know, doing my homework and research and learning about access to guns and gun violence. And I said, this is one of the things that I think is the biggest problems in our country. So it became one of my main focuses.
Well, look, this show is dedicated to trying to get us to talk about the things that are difficult to talk about, and we really want to thank both of you today for being here. I think another show is really in the offings for us, because there's so much more that we can get our listeners to do.
Look forward to it. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. And it's a nice way to start a Sunday.
It's a nice way to start a Sunday, and we end the show with Bono, who is one of our heroes in social activism. Thank you, Bono. Thank you, WICC. Thank you, Connoisseur Media. And most of all, thank you to my guest and Adrian in the studio, who helped me learn all about these wires and buzzes and lights. Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next Sunday at 10 a.m.